Good morning. This is your host, Lydia Aranda, with Rainmakers. It's Monday, May 5th. Happy Cinco de Mayo to everybody who's celebrating today. And Matt Neely, behind the production glass. Good to see you this morning, Matt.
Good to see you, Lydia.
I love this cooler weather we're having. And gosh, it's going to swing back up by Friday. So
right,
good thing we're on Mondays.
It while it lasts.
That's
right. I think
right.
The plants got a little sprinkle yesterday just to kind of dust them off and give them a little natural rainwater that is not treated with anything except for nature. So that's a good thing.
Exactly. What a nice treat that is for them. And speaking of dusting off, the wind yesterday.
Yeah.
That was something else. My allergies have just not quit.
But indeed.
I guess that's the not so painful price we pay for being in this gorgeous area.
I think I read once that May is the windiest month. In Tucson.
So okay. Well, then we're right on track.
We've
bustled in with this, the blowing wind. So excited to be here this morning and our first Monday of this fabulous month of May. All kinds of things going on. We're wrapping up a great semester at colleges and universities everywhere. We are entering into not quite the summer. We're having May blooms, as you talked about. Things are still blooming. And we're excited to talk about everything that does to bring stories to light, not only here on Rainmakers and all week long on The Morning Voice, but talking to the people who actually get the stories out there. I'm so excited that this morning my first guest is Trinity Norris, because Trinity, who grew up in Sells, Arizona, Trinity is a graduate student of the U of A. Her undergrad was from there. She earned her Bachelor of Arts in Digital Journalism, but now she's very active as a master's student in the College of Social and Behavioral Sciences studying global media or studies of global media in the School of Journalism. She also works at the U of A in the Indigenous Resilience Center. Welcome, Trinity Norris. So great to have you in studio this morning.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Wonderful. And you also have another job that keeps you busy because you work with Tucson Spotlight, correct?
Yes, as a journalist.
Yay. I understand, and you may be aware, that Caitlin Schmidt, the co-founder of Tucson Spotlight and journalist extraordinaire, was one of our guests a few weeks back, and she told us an awful lot about what's going on at the Spotlight, it being a nonprofit news center. And I wonder, how did you first get involved with the Spotlight? Did you know about it before you met Caitlin, or did you find out about it through her?
I did follow Tucson Spotlight around on social media quite a bit, but I met Caitlin actually at a book club event that I was attending to support my friend, and kind of told her a little bit about myself and that I'm just like a student journalist trying to get out there in the field. So, and she was really open to bringing me in.
Wonderful. And so now you are in there actually focusing on particular stories that tie a little bit between the U of A and the community at large, and also tapping into the different Indigenous communities. Is that correct?
Yeah. So a lot of my stories, I tend to gravitate towards highlighting Indigenous and Native perspectives for sure. Also, university as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested. Well, it's not surprising to me that you knew about Tucson Spotlight, because after all, your undergrad degree is in digital journalism. But for our listeners out there who might not be understanding what that is, what comes to mind for me is meaning that the reporting happens digitally. So whether it's on social media, it's on the internet, people can access through their devices. But tell me more what digital journalism as a whole is for you.
For me, definitely highlighting the fact that, media is changing, especially today, and we're seeing a lot of news organizations and just news generally found on Instagram or social media. So definitely, I think for me, digital journalism is that. It's still being ethically, still going with ethics and still highlighting the facts of the stories that we're telling, but through different formats.
Fantastic. So I imagine that's going to be one of those areas that continues to grow and expand. Maybe even will change its name over time, way back 100 million years ago when I was in school, I studied communications. I earned my undergrad degree in intercultural communication. And at the time, communications sat in a school called public programs. And that is just no longer the case these days. Usually communications at some universities now sits, it was always related to broadcast and journalism, it seemed, but it always its own school, because different schools of thought and all that. I think that's still the case. But nowadays, it seems universities are packaging some of those fields of study differently. So I think it'll be interesting to see what we call, quote, digital journalism in maybe just 5 or 10 years.
Right, literally. Maybe even a couple of years, honestly. The ever-changing world of media.
So switching over to then what your day job is on campus, IRES Center, or the Indigenous Resilience Center at the U of A. Tell us about that. Where does that center sit in comparison to other administrations? Or is it in the School of Journalism? Is it over in the administration area? Tell us a little more about that.
No, so the Indigenous Resilience Center is actually a research center housed at the Environmental and Resources Building, too. And it's led by Dr. Carletta Chief, and we have a team of like 21 people.
Wow.
Yeah, it seems big, but trust me, we're still spread very thin. We're in the community. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of our work focuses in working with tribes and communities, because we know that tribal communities already like have solutions for their own environmental challenges that they may be facing. And a lot of the times, you know, financial needs are like kind of like the setback.
Okay.
So, you know, for us, we're fortunate enough because we you know, we're under a grant called the Waverly Street Grant, and we've been able to provide funding for our tribal community partners to you know, work towards those environmental solutions. And we knew that they have the resources already. They know what they need to do. So, it's just providing that extra resource to them.
And does this center focus, I'm going to imagine in particular, it will highlight some of the, or work with some of the nations that are here in proximity to Southern Arizona, but does it also focus on issues and challenges and solutions that are happening all around our state with all 22 nations or even beyond that perhaps?
Yeah, so our center, we actually have like core faculty that work with different tribes. So we have faculty that work with Navajo Nation and Hopi and San Carlos. And we also work with the two local tribes here in Tucson, you mm-hmm. know, Tona Atam and Pascua Yaqui. So I think there is room for expansion. And I think definitely that's the route we're going towards. We're still a relatively new center. It's only been around since 2021.
Wow.
Yeah, so we grew pretty quickly.
Yes.
But it's, you know, it's only going up here. I'm very optimistic about the future for IRES.
Oh, wonderful. Well, you sound very enthusiastic about it. And I think anything that's focusing on environmental health, which means a lot of different things, right? It doesn't just mean it's not climate only or water only, but it's some of those things together with perhaps how communities work within each other and think about their proximity to other communities, to maybe we were talking about wind, you know, just in the weather today when I was speaking with Matt. So things like wind that might bring other particles, other seeds, other growth into our area, that has an impact on what's happening with allergens or what's happening with, you know, impact to soil, or I would imagine just a whole slew of things.
Yeah, it definitely all ties together. You know, one thing can lead to another. So it's been great working with IRES. I think there's a lot of room for improvement and collaborations, and I'm excited.
That's wonderful. And so being at the IRES Center, working perhaps with other centers around the university and certainly the major fields of study and the research groups. And again, I want to highlight that you actually already have graduated from the U of A with your bachelor's, and you're now working on your master's in your second year into that?
Yes.
Yay. So graduation is on the, you can see it on the horizon.
Yes. I see the light at the end of the tunnel.
And it's not a train heading your way, right?
Exactly.
That's great. That's wonderful. Well, So tying that into then your work at Tucson Spotlight, are you, do they still use the phrase, are you a beat reporter? Are you a liaison into other writing sources or resources or partners? How do you describe your role at Tucson Spotlight? Journalist, of course, but what else would you put around that?
I'd say I'm just a partner. I'm happy to just be a part of the team, to be presented with the opportunity to write the stories that I enjoy writing is really cool.
Great. So I'm going to imagine they have a little bit to do with environment.
Yeah, a little bit.
Wonderful. Well, I know I'm going to do a little teaser here before we go to our first break. We still have a little bit of time, but I understand from our conversations that you have recently, in the recent weeks, been in Washington, D.C. with the Planet Forward Environmental Journalism Conference.
Yes.
And at that, you were able to give the opening reflection. How was that? Was it fun?
That was a lot of fun. It was so nerve-wracking, though.
Was it your first time doing something to that caliber in a national setting?
Yeah, definitely, like, on a national setting where there's people I don't even know watching, or, you know, it was nerve-wracking, but it was really cool.
I bet that was exciting. Now, that happened in April. Is that an annual conference that takes place or a gathering?
I believe so, yes. They've been having it in April every other year.
Okay. And I'm going to guess probably cherry blossoms were starting to fade away by then. I love the cherry blossoms in D.C. I got
so
to go
pretty.
The last time I was there was in not quite late March, so it was still very cold, and you could see them everywhere, but they were going to be fading. So I don't know if you got to see them when you were there.
Got them in full bloom. They were really pretty.
I saw Matt's eyebrows pop up with the cherry blossoms. Aren't they just great when the whole city is
so
just
really
covered
missed
with them?
I missed the peak of them. So and I used to be there a lot on business, but so I missed the real. You were both very lucky to be able to see that.
Oh, it's just one of my most favorite things. Well, I know we're about to go to a break, so let's put a pin in the Planet Forward and talk a little bit about it after this break. You're listening to Rainmakers on The Morning Voice, KVOI. And we're back. This is Rainmakers, Monday morning show of The Morning Voice. This is your host, Lydia Aranda, and with me this morning, we have our first guest is Trinity Norris, and we've been talking with Trinity about her studies in journalism. She has an undergrad degree from the U of A in digital journalism and now is in her second year, almost complete, one more semester to go with her master's degree in global media. Trinity, thank you for joining us on Rainmakers this morning.
Yes, happy to be here.
And, you know, I got to say, before we get into it too much, and Matt, you might have a thought on this. I have discovered that not only is today Cinco de Mayo, which is a kind of fun social, it's turned into quite a social holiday all around the country, but this is National Pet Week. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Nor did I. And then I understand that this week is also National Red Cross Week. So we've got a lot of things going on there with some imbibing and celebrating.
Yeah.
With our furry friends, our four-legged, furry, waggy-tailed friends, and others, since it's National Pet Week. We've got felines and canines and birds and reptiles, I'm sure.
Perhaps I'll run over to the Red Cross and give a pint.
That would be great. Anybody who wants to help support Red Cross, of course, I'm sure cash and in-kind does well, but always looking for those blood donations for emergencies and people in need, so... With that little headline.
Well, now you and Trinity were talking about the building that your classes are in. Is that the one with the neat kind of slot canyon running through it?
Yes.
That is a beautiful building. What's the name of the building again?
We call it ENR2, but it's called Environmental and Resources Building 2.
Yeah, if you get a chance to stop by there, the building is made like, is it Antelope Canyon? It's made like a slot canyon. It's absolutely stunning in the courtyard there.
It's beautiful.
Definitely worth a visit.
I'm so glad that you brought that up because I think that's one of those things also. And I think our Friday show, our co-host, Dr. Ed Ackerley, when he talks about U of A Wonders, maybe he'll have to pick up a little bit on that and some of the just gorgeous architecture that happens all over our U of A campus. But that one in particular, I've taken a quick glance, but you've reminded me of that, Matt. I gotta get there and walk around a little bit more. Trinity, I'm sure that also helps... stimulate some interesting conversation and kind of lends itself well to the whole purpose of the IRES Center.
Yes.
And the environmental health when you're in a setting such as mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, it's so pretty. And where IRES sits, we're on like the fifth floor of that building. And
oh, wow.
we can oversee like downtown Tucson, but we also have a cool, nice view from atop. So it's
nice.
Beautiful.
That's great. And you know, atmosphere, environment, surroundings, visuals, all of that makes such a great difference on whether folks are stimulating their brains and learning a little bit differently, thinking about different perspectives. So when you have those viewpoints and those vistas, how wonderful. So right before the break, we were talking about you being out in D.C. with, I think, a couple thousand of your closest friends for the Planet Forward in conference, and you were keynoting the opening reflection.
Yes.
Tell us what you talked about.
So for me, I think it was important to highlight the fact that it's important that we're talking about our stories like this, because a lot of what the Planet Forward correspondence and what the whole thing was about was environmental storytelling and highlighting like different stories or, you know, challenges that different places might be facing. And it was important for me to highlight and to open the space with like, it's important and you're important that you're here and you're great. You're doing amazing things telling these stories, because these stories need to be told, especially with the climate change, now and how the climate is continuously changing. It's, you know, I think it's something that needs to be told.
Yes. And that way then it's not presumed, mm-hmm. it's not misinterpreted, but it opens up not only for folks to learn about other things, but then to hear the personal impact of the person telling that story,
mm-hmm.
it seems to me.
Yeah. And for me, because when I going to that conference, I was going with the Indigenous Correspondence Program, which is a program that's kind of like a it's like a collaborative program with U of A and George Washington University, which is what houses Planet Forward.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so it's been like my people in my cohort have been telling stories, and I think one particular stood out to me, which was talking about cultural burnings and bringing that aspect into there and how that is related to bringing them back and how that helps the land in different ways.
And when you say cultural burnings, you mean burning of certain lands in order to then regenerate growth?
Yeah.
So not wildfires, but purposeful burns.
Purposeful burns, yes.
Oh, okay. That's really, you know, I think that in and of itself is always so interesting to me, because it is certainly nature's way.
Mm.
You know, when things seem to be devastated and scorched, they're actually, some of that devastation actually provides new kind of minerals and opportunity for growth.
Mm-hmm.
But to do it purposefully, which I think we've seen, you know, in the agricultural space, you know, folks do that on purpose. It's sort of like pruning, if you will, but in a very different way. I'm sure anyone who's in that industry is listening to me and cringing as I'm making it sound so simplistic. But when we think about things like that, what comes to my mind from the aspect of storytelling is looking at perhaps disaster or intention as what comes after is the silver lining. So there's an opportunity to rebuild. And I think we try to tell students, we try to tell our colleagues, if you're a leader or manager of a team, you try to let people know that sometimes in our failure is where we have our best success, because we learn from mm-hmm. whatever, you know, broke or whatever didn't happen.
Right.
And right now I'm just, all of that is swirling through my mind as you're describing that. So that's very interesting to me. You mentioned, so that was Planet Forward. And
yes.
That's George Washington University. It's a national gathering and happens, it seems, annually. I know that later today you had shared with me that after we're finished this morning, that you're actually going to be heading to Ak Chin for the Tribal Environmental Health Forum. Sounds
yes.
to me like it's a little bit similar. Is this a statewide or regional or another kind of forum that kind of pulls from the other one? Or what's the purpose of this forum?
This one is completely unrelated to Planet Forward.
Oh, okay.
This one is, my center, the Indigenous Resilience, or IRES is what we like to call it as well, is actually co-hosting this tribal environmental health forum. And so we'll have a handful of speakers, and we'll actually have like field trips. Like we're taking a field trip out to Auction wastewater facility. So and seeing the, like, how that is. So
nice. And to remind our listeners, Auction is where?
Auction is about an hour and a half out from Tucson, maybe 30 minutes to maybe 30 minutes from Casa Grande, maybe.
Right, kind of north, I want to say, let me get my directions correct here. It is east, right? Sort of northeast of Casa Grande in the Pinal County area.
Around that area.
Yeah. So there's some interesting things happening there with water and the canals and some solar and all kinds of other things. Am I thinking of the right area there?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
The Gila and yes. So that environmental health forum, and again, we're talking about environmental health, not people health, although it contributes to people and animals and everything else, to communities being healthy and having more, less toxicity in many different ways. We were talking also a little bit about other organizations that are in the green space, that are in the environmental space. Certainly a lot of state and federal agencies pay attention to that. It'll be interesting to know as this goes on how groups like maybe Green Latinos and Eco Madres, and or I said that very phonetically, Eco Madres is a division of and a focus on a lot of the ecosystem and environmental put together by mothers. And so playing on that word of Eco Madres and green approach to a healthier environment, I think there are probably a lot of partnerships that are starting to build up that we can continue to talk about after we take this quick break. You're listening to Rainmakers. I'm Lydia Aranda. We are on KVOI, The Morning Voice. And we're back. This is Lydia Aranda. You are listening to Rainmakers on Monday, May 5th. We are on KVOI, The Morning Voice. And with me on this first segment is Trinity Norris. Trinity is with the IRES Center at the U of A and also with Tucson Spotlight. She is a master's student studying global media. Trinity, thanks again for being with us this morning here in studio.
Happy to be here.
We were talking before the break a little bit about environmental health. And you were speaking about the upcoming Tribal Environmental Health Forum that's taking place at Auction. And I first want to make a correction. I got my caffeine had not quite kicked in. And I kept saying that was up a little bit west of Casa Grande, but it's actually east, well, northeast, because Auction sits in the city of Maricopa or thereabouts. So that is a fabulous center, pretty significant convention center. I'm sure it's going to be a great gathering that happens out there. And when we're talking about whether they are these National Planet Forward or Regional Tribal Environmental Health Forum, a lot of things connect into or happen with the support of many others. We spoke about groups like Eco Madres and Green Latinos, which is Green Latinos fights for political and economic, cultural, and environmental liberation, to use their little mission slogan. But other leaders around the community, whether they are in research, whether they are state agencies, but also some of our elected leaders. And what I recall in our recently, the late, great Congressman Raul Grijalva always was a champion of environmental health and environmental safety. It seemed that he had quite a lot of interaction with all of you, and I, meaning you at the IRES Center, the Indigenous Resilience Center, and many others. I think you all honored him recently, correct?
Yeah, we actually honored him and the work that he's done within tribal communities, because he's been so significant. Mm-hmm. He's been such a big supporter, and even for us at IRES, I mean, I've only been there for like a year or so, but definitely, you know, the IRES, older IRES members, they talked very highly of him and the impact that he had with them in growing IRES.
Yes, it was very important to him to see These kind of discussions take place even certainly formally, but even as it came up into other related centers, initiatives, communities, groups, and having the generations, many generations to come, pay attention to the issues. That was very much his legacy, and I'm so excited that all of you are doing the work that you're doing to continue to push that along. So in these forums, in these gatherings, do you find it interesting to wear two hats, one being a part of the IRIS Center and knowing the mission and the kind of things that the center itself are doing, and then switching to your master's study hat? You are, after all, still studying, still working in your field for your master's degree in global media, and then, of course, a journalist. So how does that all play together? Particularly, how does that help inform your studies? And maybe do you have an upcoming capstone project or research project that you're focusing on with global media? Where does that all intersect?
Yeah, so they all kind of actually intersect in different ways. Definitely, they're different topics that I tend to focus on, but they all kind of relate in certain ways. So with the hat I wear with IRIS, I'm the marketing communications graduate assistant for them. And that means, you know, I handle newsletters, social media posts, and I actually do the photography for a lot of those for the center. So, and write as well, press releases, stories. And so that is that hat. And then student-wise, I think, especially in my undergrad, I was very focused on writing and highlighting Indigenous and Native and Indigenous voices. And a lot of my stories, or majority of my stories, I should say, were highlighting those folks. And all my sources were Indigenous, so okay, they kind of coincided. And then, you know, Tucson Spotlight journalism, I also lead with that in wanting to highlight Native and Indigenous voices, because, I mean, you know, a lot of the times I feel like, in my opinion, a lot of stories that are being told are in a deficit lens for Native folks. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, that's kind of one of my goals, is to strive to highlight our voices and show all the cool stuff that we're doing as new folks.
Well, and I would imagine not only do you have a plethora of topics to pull from all the time, just with daily activities and not being able to cover everything all at once, but what I've always found interesting in listening to you speak about what motivates you and what sort of informs you to dig and delve deeper, is that you're pulling from your own growing up in cells, smaller community, rural community, but with many, many systems, a growing community college, among other things. And I wonder, do you find people getting excited and being able to tap into you to kind of get their stories out, or is it still sometimes a pulling a little bit to connect some of those dots?
I think it goes both ways. I think it's cool because, I mean, I grew up in that community, born and raised, you know, from cells, and the community has been my biggest supporter, really. And it's cool to see that they're really excited for me and they want me to do really well. And they, you know, offer these opportunities for me to, like, you know, take photos for them, or, you know, these small little ways that I can help out in those. So.
Wonderful. Well, as you know, and you're sitting right here in the studios at KVOI, lots of different kind of conversations happen here, certainly in the Morning Voice. And to remind some of our listeners, every day has a little bit different topic, a little bit different theme, because we have different hosts. And Rainmakers is on Mondays, talking about that fun intersection where workforce and education and business all come together to help communities thrive, and what is happening in those collaborations and in those intersections. Tuesdays, we focus on civic engagement with Ted Maxwell. Wednesdays, food and restaurants and policy and all the good goings on with Grant Kruger. Thursdays, we talk about tourism, and particularly a lot of historical tourism, sort of the history behind the tourism, the tourist attractions, the natural environment, things that attract folks to Southern Arizona, with Tom Moulton. And we wrap it up with some U of A wonder and small business success with Dr. Ed Ackerley. It seems to me that there's great opportunity for us. If we are smart, we're going to be keeping in touch with you and hearing the kind of things that are bubbling up from a global media perspective. because that's your study. That's what you're focusing on. You're getting ready to wrap up a good 2.5 years of attention to that based on all of your other good work so far. If you had to sort of sum it up, global media, what does that mean to you when you think about what you're studying and then you juxtapose that to what you're observing happen in a rapid pace, daily storytelling, things that happen in the news cycle, things that are happening in D.C., and kind of bring that together to local impact, like what you focus on in Tucson Spotlight is very local news, very much telling the giving the local voice. And so where does global fit into local?
Well, with me, at least with my definition of global media and kind of how I've interpreted that, it's mainly, for me, I'm looking at like how news is being reported and globally and how that might directly impact us locally. Mm-hmm. You know, and we see like the different, you know, conflicts that are happening across the seas and then how that leads to, you know, government administration, how they're responding to these things, and the way they respond also can reflect down to local areas and stuff. So sure. Definitely it all intersects, I feel like.
Wonderful. I think that you are paying a lot of attention to really that funnel, and that's exactly what's happening. So we have these big issues that probably are important pretty much to everybody, you know, health, environment, economy, so many other things, education, and really seeing how the strange little webs bring it into our local community. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt that not only at Spotlight or your community at the U of A and Tucson in general, Pima County in general, is really benefiting from having you pay attention to those intersections and then also bring in the other voices, not only from CELS and the nation, the Hanatham from the outlying area, but also from the local folks, maybe even the local agencies. I know Mitzi Lopez and some other folks who are focusing on economic development for the nation. You know, I think of her voice and you coming together. I think of other women's writers groups, book clubs, journalists coming together in different cross sections. So you are sitting right in the middle of an awful lot of energy and things that are important for the rest of us to hear.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely it's, you know, it's a lot, but I think we love to see it, right? I'm always happy. And I think for me, it really comes down to just being able to share stories and being, I don't know, I just feel really grateful that people even want me to tell their stories, right? They feel comfortable enough for me to share their stories. They trust me enough. And I think that's what a lot of the work that I do is like building those relationships and building that community and that trust, I think, is important when it comes to storytelling and all that.
Well, you're definitely being a rainmaker through that talent and that skill that you have and your very welcoming personality that I think draws people and makes them comfortable. We're going to take another break here in just a few seconds, so stay tuned. This is Lydia Aranda. You're listening to Rainmakers on The Morning Voice. And we're back listening to Gotta Give It Up by Marvin Gaye. Thank you, Matt Neely, behind the glass, keeping us grooving here on Rainmakers. I'm Lydia Aranda, your host, and you're listening to Rainmakers on KVOI, The Morning Voice. It is Monday, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo Day, the kickoff of National Pet Week, National Red Cross Week, and lovely, lovely weather this mild Monday in
certainly
May.
Certainly for the first half of the week, you can't beat it.
It is just wonderful, and we've been having a very pleasant conversation this morning with Trinity Norris. Trinity is a grad student earning her master's degree in global media at the U of A, where she also had already earned her bachelor's in digital journalism. She works at the IRES Center, which is the Indigenous Resilience Center at the U of A, along with the Arizona Institute for Resilience. And before the break, we were talking about your particular skill in building relationships, not only with your colleagues and coworkers, but the folks of whose story you are telling, or opening up actually their voices to tell their own story. Tell us a little bit more about what gave you the bug to get into media and journalism to begin with. You are first generation going to school, going to college and going on to a master's degree. So something in you said, of all the things I can study, let's go for journalism. What was that?
You know, that's a funny question, because when I was first like thinking about going to college and like figuring out what I wanted to do, I initially wanted to go into film and television. And then I don't know what in me, I think for me, I was like, I think I'm a good writer. So I decided to do journalism, I think. And then right in the beginning, I just kind of knew what I wanted to focus on, which was highlighting Indigenous and Native Indigenous voices.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job at that, not only in your studies and in your work at the U of A at the IRES Center. I was noticing that right on the front of the IRES Center website, it really talks about, you know, the tagline is relationship, respect, reciprocity, and responsibility. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that those go very hand in hand with your work as a journalist, as a storyteller. And I think that's no doubt to me why Caitlin Schmidt and other folks grabbed you up at the Tucson Spotlight, and you're doing a fantastic job there, not only with your stories and working there, but I know you interact with the board of directors. You're a great liaison out into community. And I think you've been writing some newsletters too for the nation and other communities. Do I have that correct?
Yeah. So that's kind of my capstone for my master's project. Oh. Yeah. So kind of like the segue into meeting Caitlin, I told her about my idea for a capstone, which was to create a newsletter or a newspaper, hopefully a newsletter or a newspaper like later on, but starting out as a newsletter to kind of start producing stories, because on the nation, we actually don't have a running newspaper at all. And mind you, the Thought Anthem Nation is a pretty big...
Very spread out, over the state and even internationally.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think it would be very beneficial for our community to have that again, because we did have a newspaper, but has since been retired. The guy that was doing it, he has since retired. And so we don't hardly have a like newspaper of the sorts to get our local, like our super local news anymore. And so I'm kind of working my way to building that out and hopefully regenerating or reviving a newspaper of the sort.
Well, it sounds like you're filling a need, but also you're making it happen in ways that over time it can phase in, it can grow, and you're paving the way for others, which of course is exactly what a rainmaker does. I've been so excited to get to know you better here, although we've met in other circumstances, and I know that we're going to keep in touch through the Tucson Spotlight and some of the other work you're doing at U of A and elsewhere. This has been such a pleasant conversation, I've no doubt, and I see for our listeners who can't quite see, there's a spark in your eye, a smile on your face, and an energy that you carry when you talk about why you do what you do, what interests you, and how you're connecting this out into other environmental forums, environmental health, public engagement, writing and journalism, and that authenticity and the ethos that comes with that kind of storytelling, definitely taking to heart the IRES relationship, respect, reciprocity, and responsibility tagline. We're getting ready to wrap up this segment. It's been such a pleasure, Trinity Norris, having you here this morning. If folks want to help support the IRES Center, I think they can go online to... let's see. I had it right in front of me.
Resilience.arizona.edu.
That's right. Resilience.arizona.edu. And of course, there's a hot button right there to donate or to participate. Yeah. And also Tucson Spotlight, always looking for more supporters, donations, story leads, partners, and folks can find Tucson Spotlight at...
Tucson Spotlight.
That's right. So Trinity, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Keep doing
the great work that you're doing. Matt, hasn't it been wonderful speaking with Trinity this morning?
Yeah, great discussion today. Nice meeting you, Trinity.
Nice to meet you.
Well, I know that you're going to be with us for part of our second hour. We are going to be welcoming in our second hour Mr. Jay Jones, who is an author and a newer person here in Pima County, living up in the Marana Dove Mountain, and you're going to hear about his new book. So please stay tuned for our second segment of Rainmakers, The Morning Voice. Cool. Good morning. Welcome back. This is Lydia Aranda, your host of Rainmakers. We are on KVOI The morning voice. Sorry, this is Monday, voice. May 5th. It sure is
May
Matt
5th,
Neely.
Cinco de Mayo, Pet Week,
and American we've got Red Cross week. All kinds of great things happening, and I think it's that lovely
and
weather.
And be gentle with your show host day. I'm just declaring it today.
There you go. Yeah. I agree with that. With your radio host, with your producers, everybody in the studio. We're so excited. We've had such a great Rainmakers show so far this first Monday in May, and it is a mild Monday. We start off the first hour with Trinity Norris, and Trinity's still in studio with us. Hi, Trinity. Thanks again for that fun first hour.
Hello.
For those of you who may not have heard, Trinity is a grad student here at the U of A. She's earning her master's in global media, but she is already a journalist at Tucson Spotlight, and she's doing great work on campus at the IRES Center, the Indigenous Resilience Center, and participates in forums and conferences locally, statewide, and nationally. So we're really great to have you, originally from Sells, Arizona, now living in Tucson up in the Oro Valley area. Thanks again, Trinity. We are launching our second segment, and our host for our second segment is Mr. Jay Jones. Jay, welcome to KVOI and being with us here in studio.
Thanks, Lydia. It's great to be here.
Fantastic. And folks, you are going to love the story about Jay Jones. Jay is here today to talk about being a new author. And his book is called A Biligana Boy Among the Navajo. And in the true story, he chronicles his 4 years living as a white kid on the Navajo Indian Nation in Window Rock, Arizona. We're going to hear a little bit more about what drew to that. But first, before going into the story, we're going to talk a little bit about Jay's background. Jay, what I understand is you joined the Marine Corps quite young. You were 17, is that correct?
Yes, I did, just out of high school.
And high school was where? Tell our audience where you grew up.
Well, I actually went to three different high schools, two in California and one in Virginia, but I ended up graduating Foothill High School out of Sacramento, California.
Wonderful. I love Sacramento, Northern California. That's a fun city. I think it's fun.
It's a wonderful, wonderful location. Weather is pretty fair most of the time, and there's a lot of scenery are nearby, and San Francisco not far away, and Tahoe, Reno area, always stuff to do.
Mm-hmm. And of course, from there, so you joined up the Marine Corps and you served in Bermuda during your time. How was that like?
Well, who would have known that there was a base that Marines could serve at in Bermuda? There actually, at the time, there was a Naval Air Station there.
Oh, wow.
And so I was part of a security detail that provided security for the Navy base in Bermuda. And it was a lot of work, honestly, but on the time off in Bermuda, it was a great place to be.
And while you were there, and even since there, after you received your honorable discharge and came back into civilian life, it sounds like you built up quite a bit of skills. Pizza and short order cook, you were a professional photographer. I'm wondering if that kind of played into why you then started telling stories, because you were taking pictures that tell other stories.
Well, actually, in high school, I was the yearbook photo editor.
Oh.
So I started, it's kind of a hobby. I started doing photography kind of young, got some decent equipment, and became the photo editor for our yearbook in high school, and then just kind of did it, dabbled in it on the side after I left high school, and was a wedding photographer for a little bit and took some journalism photos for the Sacramento Bee local paper and just kind of things like that.
Sacramento Bee, a favorite newspaper, certainly to me and a lot of my colleagues. From my Wells Fargo years, we spent an awful lot of time up in Sacramento, and the Sacramento Bee covered an awful lot of what Wells Fargo was doing out in community as far as community relations and investing in community and, of course, finance and some other things like that. Trinity, are you familiar with the Sacramento Bee? Have you ever read its stories or known some people that work there?
I've read a couple of stories, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great, great spot. Again, When you were there, well, I also see that in your background, Jay, that you were an employment counselor, a drugstore manager trainee, a hotel front desk clerk, bar manager, restaurant manager. So you've been in that hospitality world a lot, in a lot of different ways, it sounds like.
Yes, I have. I think it's been probably 5 years I spent in the hotel restaurant business. Also was a hotel night manager. So those of you that have been in that industry know the long hours, 60, 65 hours a week. And it was very demanding and not something I wanted to do for a career, though, but a lot of fun at the time.
You get to know the locals as well as the folks that are not local, and they come in and start to hear why they're in the place that you're in.
That's right. That's right. We had a lot of social things in the bar that I was a bar manager at, and there was always some activity going on, and we had locals that came in and got to know them real well.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I remember in Sacramento that happens around the holidays is a lot of the venues have some older storefronts, you know, with the glass and all that kind of thing. And there's holiday decoration that takes place. And I think the Sacramento Bee in particular takes time to create like a naughty and nice list as sort of a running joke and really gives attention to a lot of the local business leaders and community leaders and has fun putting those lists up around the holidays. So I think that makes for great fodder, especially coming into a restaurant or a bar.
Sure.
And connecting those local leaders to anybody else who might be visiting.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a very vibrant community, and Sacramento has certainly grown immensely over the last 10, 20 years.
So in addition to that, what's catching me on not only finance, you also had a term as a financial advisor in your background, in your history there, a disc jockey, and also beauty pageant MC. Did you have a lot of fun doing that? And was that in California as well, or was that elsewhere?
No, that was as a bar manager. we would have, like I say, a lot of social events that drew a lot of people, and part of my job as the manager, I was the MC for these beauty pageants, you know, bikini contests and dumb things like that.
Whatever would help folks come to the venue and stay there with different activities. Were those fundraisers ever for things like, I don't know, scholarships or nonprofits or things of that nature?
No, but we were giving away pretty nice prizes. You know, in the 80s, when I was doing this, early 80s, the prize was all expense paid trip for two to Cancun, and so that was a pretty good prize.
That's a pretty nice prize.
Yeah, second place was $1,000 in cash. So
nice. Anytime, anywhere, everybody can use $1,000.
Right, right. So it was fun, and as you said, I was a financial advisor. I had actually retired from that industry as an advisor for 25 years, and then I was what you would call an investment wholesaler for 8 years. That's actually going out calling on financial advisors and selling investments.
Okay.
So that they in turn would sell to their clients. So 33 years in the financial services industry, and I retired in 2018.
Well, good for you. And I see that while you were in between doing the professional photography, security guard, fire alarm, drugstore manager, bartending, emceeing those beauty contests, you were earning a degree in business management and of course, as you mentioned, then financial advisor, investment wholesaler. So it seems to me that really, that was a great background for you to get to know people, which is very important, relationship building with your clients and clientele, making sure you have that trust and communication going on. And then once you retired, you came out to, that's what brought you out here to Dove Mountain in the Tucson area, yes?
Right. My wife and I retired, we were living in San Antonio, Texas at the time, and then had made a decision to leave Texas. And I kind of grew up in the Arizona area, or in Arizona, and had wanted to come back here, love the desert, love the heat. And we kind of, snooped around Arizona over a course of 6 months, and decided that we liked Tucson and moved up to the Dove Mountain area.
That's a beautiful area in the northern part of our community here. Well, we're glad that you're here. And as Trinity and I were talking about in the first hour, you know, when we think about from whence we've come, you know, whatever community we grew up in and how we bring it seems like folks love to kind of come out to Southern Arizona to, if you're from an outlying area of Tucson, to come into Tucson or Oro Valley or Vail or, you know, some of the areas here and really just continue to leverage the beauty. You talked about the heat and you're right. You know, it's going to get hot again this Friday. So Trinity, I think you also talked about travels to other places and being in forums in other places, but kind of bringing all of that attention and those resources back here to the Tucson area. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. We're getting ready to go on a break. But Jay, so nice to have you here in studio at KVOI, because in addition to that wonderful and varied background that you have, I want to get talking about what took you to Navajo Nation land, the impact of being there in the community, and all of that is the fodder for your memoir. So we're going to talk about that shortly when we come back from our break. Listeners, please stay in touch. You're listening to Rainmakers with Lydia Aranda on KVOI, The Morning Voice.
A little something for Jay.
There you go. And we're back. This is Lydia Aranda. I am your host on this Monday morning in May, May 5th to be exact. We are here on the Rainmaker Show, part of the Morning Voice on KVOI, 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. And this morning we have in our second segment Mr. Jay Jones. Mr. Jones is the new author of the book A Biligana Boy Among the Navajo. And we were just speaking a little bit ago, Jay, may I call you Jay?
Sure.
That you had quite a varied employment history, lots of things going on, many different industries and lots of roles within them that came after having served in the Marines. But let's go even before that, because the setting of your book is really in your childhood in the 60s, living on the Navajo Nation and being the non-Navajo on the nation for those years and kind of all of the trials and tribulations that came around that. Tell us a little more about that setting.
Right. Part of the subtitle also of my book that I like to refer to is how did a white kid like me come to live on the reservation in the 1960s? And it all really began when my parents divorced, when I was at a fairly young age. My mom had a mental breakdown, and I ended up going to live with my dad in Virginia, in the Alexandria, Virginia area. He was working in the Air Force out of the Pentagon there. And so I lived with him after my mom and father divorced. And so 2 years after that occurred, received a phone call one day that my mom wanted to have me come back and live with her. She had remarried another gentleman, and who actually worked for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They both worked for the Bureau of Indian Affairs,
okay,
or the BIA. So my mom had custody of myself and my brother. My brother, who was mentally disabled at the time, though, was living in the Arizona Children's Colony in Coolidge.
Oh,
so he was at the colony there, and I was living with my dad in Alexandria, and mom wanted me to come back and live with her, so my dad packed up the car one day in 1967, and we drove back to, I did not know where she lived. She said, I live on the Navajo Indian Reservation in Window Rock, and I said, well, where is that? You know, and she said, well, it's up in the northeast corner of the state in Arizona. And so in 67, dad and I drove back there, and I actually began a whole another life. It seemed as though you know, I was a foreigner in an outside area, but the book is chronicles my 4 years there, and a lot of great stories, funny stories, sad stories, but it's a good read.
Well, it sounds exciting, and just that drive alone. Well, first of all, just going from where you were living previously and then going to Virginia, being separated from your brother, from your mom, and everybody kind of coming back together at still such a young age, that in and of itself has a lot of dynamics going on. What was that drive like in the car from Virginia to the Four Corners area to Navajo Nation? I mean, that's not a quick trip, especially back then.
Well, I didn't want to go. I had been living, as I said, with my father in Alexandria for 2 years, and we had a very, very comfortable lifestyle. I was in a routine going to school, and we would go visit my grandparents in Pennsylvania on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And so there was a routine and that I was accustomed to and I enjoyed. My dad was like, you know, Andy Griffith on the Andy Griffith Show, or you might remember the courtship of Eddie's father.
I do.
So it was me and my dad just living alone, and I was very content with that. And so to have to go to the reservation was not something I wanted to do. It was very disheartening. And during the whole trip there, I practically cried most of the time because, you know, I was being uprooted from my lifestyle there.
From everything you knew.
Right.
So you arrive to the Navajo Nation and settle in, and then starts the adventure.
That's right. It starts the adventure. In the early part of the book, I talk about how I really became indoctrinated into the Indian culture, the Indian lifestyle. We went to, which is still very, very famous today, and a lot of people attend, is the intertribal ceremony in Gallup, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first real, real exposure to Native American life. I mean, it was unbelievable to see when we drove there that particular day to go to it. I mean, there were indigenous people coming from all over the place,
yes,
walking, riding in wagons. A few had cars, but most were walking, riding horses, and they were in wagons. And it's like, is this 1967 or 1867? It was a real, real shock to see. And we attended the parade there in Gallup, at the intertribal ceremony, and mm-hmm. then went to see all the culture, the exhibits and arts and crafts and things of that nature. But it was just amazing. There were, you know, groups of people standing around cooking food and bartering and just having a good time. And
Celebrating,
exactly, yep.
Have you ever attended some of those ceremonies and gatherings and celebrations, Trinity? Have you had an opportunity to go to Gallup and do that?
I have not, but it would be really interesting.
It is. I've had an opportunity to do that, and it is very overwhelming. You know, beautiful traditional dress, and also just a mixing of culture, a little bit of business going on, and like you said, some celebrations, some arts and crafts, some sales, food, mm-hmm. But also a lot of celebration. But the difference between that happening now and happening in 1967, the process, the celebrations themselves is probably still very similar, but now with many more people. And certainly, as you pointed out, you know, the mode of transportation is different.
Right, right. Yes, it was a... eye-opening experience just to see all of that.
So when you were surrounded by that, did that help give you an appreciation or help you enjoy at least the setting that you were in a little bit more? Because you were seeing, instead of day-to-day life, you were seeing some celebrations, some other nations coming together, or maybe other pueblos coming together. And did that help?
Oh, sure, because it voided the stereotype.
Yes.
You know, most people think, people would ask me, well, are you going to go live in a teepee? Or, you know, I mean, really silly things. Or,
sure.
Or do they still live in teepees? Or, but going and seeing this, it broke the stereotype of Native American people and it really opened my eyes. They were very, very proud in the dance that they were doing and marching in the parade and showing off their ethnic culture. And it in the 60s, of course, there were a lot of Westerns on at the time,
mm-hmm.
a lot of movies that came out that didn't portray Native Americans very positively.
Correct.
And so you would go to, when I saw this, it's like, oh, wow, these people are really, really amazing. And they take pride in who they are and you know, their
the
culture
history.
And what they do, yes.
Yeah. And the history amidst, and especially at that time, I'm sure a backdrop that was not so pleasant.
Correct.
So what a wonderful eye-opening experience. It sounds like also in your book that people will read about they'll understand the relationship that you built with some friends, joining the Boy Scouts, being part of the Navajo Little League, getting closer to your neighbors, that it sounds like they welcomed you in and taught you things.
Yes, I had, when I first arrived there, one of our neighbors who lived across the street, a lady worked with my mother at the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Laura Begay, and her son was Noden Begay, and we went over to see them shortly after I arrived there, and I ended up becoming very good friends with Noden, and his grandmother still lived in a traditional hogan way out in the north west part of the state, or the reservation, mm-hmm. west of Chinle, which is up in the northern region. And so after time, when they got to know me a little bit, they took me out there. And so I got to spend some really, really interesting time with who I called Grandma Begay. That was Noden's grandmother in their hogan. And it was fascinating, you know.
I imagine so, and I imagine that those kind of memories will sit with you even today. Certainly they informed the writing of this book, which is recently completed, yes?
Yes, it's completely finished, and it's in both on an ebook and in paperback, and it will be coming out this Wednesday, May 7th, available at all the major online retail bookstores.
So like Amazon and the different outlets, is that correct?
Correct. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, you know, all the major outlets, Apple Books, etc. So they will all have this memoir available.
That's great. And I know that you'll be doing some upcoming book signings here in the greater Tucson area. One at the La Cholla Barnes & Noble coming up this Saturday, right?
Correct. This Saturday, May 10th from noon to 3, I will be at the Barnes & Noble on the west side on La Cholla, and be able to talk about my story and sign books.
That's great. Well, we're going to talk more about your story when we come back after this next break. This is Lydia Aranda. You're listening to Rainmakers on KVOI, The Morning Voice, with our guest, Jay Jones. And we're back. This is Lydia Aranda with Rainmakers on this Monday, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, the kickoff of National Pet Week, the kickoff of National Red Cross Week. And it's a wonderful, mild Monday here in Tucson, Arizona, at the KVOI studios. Rainmakers is the place, and our guest today is Jay Jones on this second segment of the show. Jay, thanks for coming into the studio this morning. This is a new experience for you being on radio.
Yes, it is. Thank you for having me. It's been fun so far.
Well, we enjoy it, and I know that you drove in from the Marana area, the Dove Mountain area, because you came from, anyone who was listening earlier, even growing up in Arlington, Virginia, and on the Navajo Nation, and being out in Sacramento, and then having a wonderful career that took you all over the place, including San Antonio. You and your wife came out to this area a few years ago, about 5 years ago, probably almost to the day.
Yes, we came out, actually it was the end of August in 2020, right at at the height of COVID.
And yes.
It was not a fun experience being around here at COVID since everything was shut down, but we came out 5 years ago.
That's wonderful. Well, at least you came at the end of the summer, so
you
were able to kind of settle in warm times. I guess one of the benefits, if one can think about benefits, the wrong word, maybe silver linings, is that with COVID, especially at that time, people were being told to stay indoors, so, you know, a little less hot than usual.
Right. Well, it was still pretty warm. September that year was
Very warm. I agree. We do have those warm times that go on and on, but then it makes for these beautiful winters and lovely springs. So I guess we'll take it. Now, you being, when you were young, being up over in Arlington, lots of different weather and seasons.
Very much. Actually, it was Alexandria.
Alexandria,
and certainly four seasons there. The year just before moving to the reservation, they had one of their largest snowstorms in 1966 there.
Oh,
so
goodness.
It was snow and cold, and but it was also four seasons and nice to see.
Well, and up north and in Navajo Nation, lovely seasons and lots of cold. The winters are cold.
Very much so. The winters there They certainly were as cold as the East Coast. The elevation mm-hmm. on the reservation, it sits on the Colorado Plateau, mm-hmm. and Window Rock, which is the capital of the Navajo Reservation, is right at 7,000 feet. So, boy, it got cold.
Yes, it's but lovely, lovely background, Chinle and Window Rock and all of those areas. And then you talked about traveling to Gallup in our last section, and observing the intertribal celebrations,
Native American, the intertribal ceremony. They call it. Yeah.
Yes, and those are lovely. You get to see celebration and nations coming together, people coming together to really celebrate their heritage, but at the same time, to join together, to
right.
collaborate.
Yes, very much so. Shortly after I arrived there, we went to that ceremony, and as I said, it was just a real eye opener to see so many Native American people. You know, Hopi, Pueblo, Zuni, Navajo. Those are the main local tribes on the reservation or nearby reservation. Mm-hmm. But they come from all over the world to this intertribal ceremony. And it was huge. It was very big.
And continues to be to this day.
Correct. I think it's grown even more now.
One of the interesting things, and we were talking about it in our first hour with Trinity, you know, she grew up in Sells, Arizona, and so she's part of the Tohonatham Nation and really takes to heart the responsibility of bringing your culture with you. And one of the things that strikes me as I look at your book and understand your story a little bit better and think about the focus that you have here is that's what you were doing. Every time you made a move, you were bringing your culture and your experiences with you, even in the blended cultures. And then you were put right in the heart of such a rich culture as the Navajo Nation, but you had to kind of sink or swim, and you got through those years. And all these years later, after all of your varied experiences, the different industries that you worked in, retiring after many decades in financial advising and investment and wealth building, the story obviously struck with you because you decided to write a memoir. That in and of itself, regardless of the topic, when somebody decides to do that, that's always very curious to me. Tell me, what was your moment that sparked that decision and that action?
Right, right. You know, actually, I knew I had a unique background, a unique history, and this was something I'd been thinking about for 30 or 40 years. You know, I thought, wow, I've got some really good stories I could share, and someday I'm going to write it. I'm going to write it out, you know. But like most people that think the same way, their inner mind tells them, no, you can't do that. Or their friends would say, oh, you don't know what you're doing or how long it'll take. Well, when I retired, I had all this free time. I mean, I might as well do something. I'm not going to, watch TV all day. So I just started putting pen to paper, or actually going on a computer and in a Word document. And for those that want to write something like this, or even do any kind of writing, some advice that I would give, I didn't know where to begin. I was just Googling one day, and I came across a story that somebody said, just write down 50 stories, 50 events or stories that you want to cover. And I thought, oh, wow, okay, I can do that. So I spent about 2 hours, and I wrote down 46 stories.
Wow.
On being on the reservation.
Kind of the theme of them, you sort of did the bullet,
right,
bullet yeah. summary of what those would be.
Exactly. It's just 26 sentences, 26 bullets. And then that gave me the starting point. Okay, I can talk about, then I could go into depth or detail on each of these stories mm-hmm. and maybe try to put it in chronological order. And that's exactly what I did. But the reason I really wrote the memoirs, not only is it a unique story of my background being there, but another reason is that I faced a lot of adversity. You know, I didn't have a lot of love and support from my parents. I certainly didn't get a whole lot of love from a lot of the kids that I went to school with. I was bullied quite frequently. And so part of the reason I wrote this is to offer persistence and strength to people that have challenges that they need to overcome, that they can do it. This is something that if you read this, you'll see that it's not all positive. There's a lot of really funny stories and good events, but it's also something that's going to allow people to be reflective about, you know. And if you're facing challenges or obstacles, especially as a young, you know, young child or a teenager, these are things that you can overcome. You need persistence and tenacity and good self-talk to yourself.
That's fabulous. I think it's such a great life lesson, I think, for anybody in any phase. And it applies to whether we're talking about our personal life, our professional lives, our college careers, or any other kind of training, you know, careers, that there are challenges and life will have its adversities. And we do have to be persistent and persevere and get ourselves through. But it's also nice to know there is a great philosophy that when you know that others have traveled difficult paths and have made it through, and you can read their story or see them or hear them, there's some encouragement in that for everybody as well.
Absolutely.
I like the creative kind of hack that you said there of sometimes instead of trying to sit down to write the book, what you do is think about stories and you just start to jot down stories. And that's been coming out of communications, and certainly Trinity was talking about learning how, you know, knowing that she was a good writer, and that kind of drew her into journalism. And what she really was more of was a storyteller on behalf of other people, but she learned how to put that in with her writing skill. I hear you exploring that of all the things that you have done in your career, which seem to be based on being able to have strike up relationships with people. You know, if you're in sales or if you're in advising, certainly if you're in employment counseling and things like that, even running venues, restaurants and bars and such, that all depends on relationships. And part of relationships is understanding your story as well as somebody else's.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I honestly didn't consider myself a writer. You know, it was a major challenge to begin and get going. But I think the thing is once you start it and document some information, you can, you know, refine it and work on it later and find you need to get a developmental editor or some editing that can help you move along with the story. But agreed that our whole lives revolve around relationships.
Mm-hmm. Good, bad, and otherwise.
That's right. That's right. Especially in sales, which was a major focus of my career, and having that relationship, building that trust and rapport, is so critical to everything that everybody does these days.
It really is. We're going to take another quick break here, but I want to learn a little bit more about how did you find those development editors or those other kinds of folks? So that, I think that might be a question that's on our listeners' minds. So we'll talk about that when we come back from this commercial break. Stay tuned. This is Rainmakers. And we're back. This is our final segment for this Monday morning, May 5th, the mild Monday, here on Rainmakers, the Morning Voice. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, and in studio for this second hour has been Mr. Jay Jones, an author, a new author, highlighting memoirs of his childhood growing up, the years that he spent growing up on the Navajo Nation, but also there are other life stories in there and other kinds of great things that Jay has talked about. Jay, it's great to have you in studio with us this morning.
Thank you, Lydia. It's been a fun time.
Wonderful. Well, before we get into one last story on your book, I want to remind all our listeners that here at The Morning Voice, we've been doing hosting different events around the community, not only to highlight different venues, but to bring our crew, our production crew, our radio personalities, and other team members and stakeholders and supporters together. We have one coming up on May 20th at Caruso's. Caruso's is an old Italian restaurant on 4th Avenue, and I have a little story about that. That is the place that my mother and father went on their first date when they were students at the U of A and fell in love and got married and all the rest of that history that happened. But I'm excited to get back to Caruso's. And speaking of historic stories and things that come from our parents and our other relatives, Jay, your whole book that you have written, your first book, you're a new author,
right,
came from reflecting on your childhood, thinking about challenges as well as fun things that may have happened in your growing up and being being a newcomer to the Navajo Nation, being there with your mom, having been uprooted from your home in Virginia to come out to Arizona, and all kinds of life lessons that came from that. Do you have a favorite story that comes to mind, or maybe one of a favorite stories?
Oh, there's so many good ones that I highlight in the book, and some of them are very funny. You know, with the Boy Scouts doing campouts and things, and being in the Little League on the reservation, Navajo Little League team. One in particular that I think our listeners might think or is unusual is that I had a really good friend in fourth grade. His name was Robbie Hubbard. And he took a liking to me, and you know, as a white kid, this was very unusual, I think, among them. But he took a liking to me, and we became very, very good friends. And you know, as kids at that age, you're doing sleepovers and so forth. And mm-hmm. so one night I was doing a sleepover at his house. And of course, as young kids, we like to stay up really, really late.
Oh, sure. That's you know? The fun of it.
And I don't know if you remember, Lydia, but back in the, this is going way back, but there used to be a TV show. It's called the CBS Saturday Movie or Saturday Evening Movie or something like mm-hmm. that. And it would come on late, like 8 or 9 o'clock. And during that era, there were a lot of Westerns. They were showing a lot of Westerns. So Robbie and I are sitting on his pull-out sofa in the living room, and we're watching this Western, and I became very uncomfortable. All of a sudden, you know, Westerns of that era, that time period, it just shows the cavalry or the white man, you know, just massacring Indians
mm-hmm.
and degrading them and, you know, getting into these terrible battles.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching this. I'm watching this with Robbie on the pull-out sofa there.
Sure.
And I'm thinking, oh, man.
You're like, this isn't good.
Well, the other side note of the whole thing is that it was taking place in Monument Valley.
Oh.
Monument Valley was about 150 miles from where we were at the time. And Robbie, his brother, came in, Joe. They would talk about, oh, that's Monument Valley. And so this huge, battle scene was erupting. And here I am, you know, I'm here with these Native Americans, these Navajos, watching them get annihilated.
Sure.
And I had this terrible, terrible, uncomfortable feeling come over me. And Joe said, well, that's the way they always depict us. Robbie didn't really care because they had become so used to seeing it.
Wow.
And it's very unfortunate, you know, that it took place because, you know, the way white people ostracize and demonize the Native American, not just the Navajo, but all over mm-hmm. Reservations throughout the country. But if you can imagine me sitting there in their home watching this, you know, it was very uncomfortable
and eye-opening. But what a great lesson for you. It sounds like that had a lot of impact on you and really continued to frame your perspective and your outlook and your actions.
Right. It did, very much so. And thank God I, you know, had somebody like Robbie, you know, that I could depend upon and have confidence in when if I had questions about certain things.
Well, we're going to be wrapping up our segment. It's been such a pleasure to have you here, Jay. I know that you have an upcoming book signing at the La Cholla Barnes & Noble this Saturday, May 10th. And folks can find out more by going to jjonesauthor.com. Thank you for being with us in The Morning Voice.
That's right. Thank you, Lydia.
Take care, and everybody have a great Monday. This has been Rainmakers.